So we've been exploring together our connection to Torah and our understanding of Torah, our relationship with Torah through the concept of Masorah. And one of the things that has continued to crop up, why don't we leave a bunch of them over there in case anybody... One of the things that has continued to crop up is the question of Machlokas and the multiplicity of opinions that we come across all the time when we learn. And it's important for us to understand the significance of Machlokas and how it relates to us in our learning and also how it applies in how we live as Torah observant Jews. So I want to begin today with two Gemaras. One Gemara we're going to try to develop this week. The goal is to try to really understand this Gemara pretty well this week. The second Gemara, that goes together with the first, but that's not going to be for this week. That'll be for next week. The Gemara tells us the following on page number one. It's the Gemara Chagiga Daf Gimel Amud Beis. Quotes a pasuk in Koheles: Divrei Chachamim kedarvonos uchemasmeros netuim bale asufos nitnu meroa echad. What does it mean when you talk about bale asufos? The bale asufos, the gatherers that is given from one shepherd. So here's the Gemara's statement in the bracket. Gimel Amud Beis. Bale asufos, these are the gatherers. Elu talmidei chachamim, these are the sages. Sheyoshvin asufos asufos, that they sit in groups. Va'oskim b'Torah, and they study Torah. But here's where it gets interesting. Halalu mitamim, these rabbis rule that the item, the object, the issue at hand is tame, is impure. V'halalu mitarim, and these rabbis say that it's pure. Isn't that a description of what we know and love? Like, isn't that exactly what we're talking about? Halalu mitamim v'halalu mitarim. Halalu osrim, these say that it's prohibited. V'halalu matirim, these say it's permitted. Halalu poslim, these disqualify. So the Gemara says, Shema Yomar Adam. Maybe somebody's going to say, how can I learn like this? What is this? I can't handle this. This is not normal. You have a bunch of people sitting around, these arguing this way, they're arguing that way. The Gemara asks our question. Everybody asks this question. How can I learn like this? What is going on? So the Gemara says, okay, this is what you should do. Talmud Lomar, it teaches you, Kulam Nitnu Meroa Echad. All of these were given from one shepherd. Kael Echad, one God, Nasnan, he delivered them. Parnes Echad, one leader, Amran, he said them. Mipi Adon Kolamasin Baruchu, from the master of the universe. Tichsiv Ayedabra Elokim Eskaladvar Moela. And therefore, what should you do? Af Ata Ase Oznecha. Make your ear like an afarcheses. What is an afarcheses? So Rashi says it's some kind of gathering vessel that would be put on the top of a mill. So the Gemara says, you have a lot of opinions, this is your Eitza. Make your ear like a collection box. Pay attention. Ukne lecha lev mevin, and acquire for your health, for yourself, an understanding heart. Lishmoa es divrei mitamim, to listen to those who say that it's tamei, ve es divrei mitarim, and the other ones who say it's the opposite. Es divrei osrin, and divrei matirin. Es divrei poslin, ve es divrei machshirin. Listen to both sides. So this is one Gemara. There are a lot of debates, but that's not necessarily a negative thing. The Gemara doesn't say it's a catastrophe. It says it's an opportunity. So we have to figure out why and what the significance of that is. And then the second half of this question is alluded to already by the beginning of the Gemara, that there are both given Meroa Ephod. And that's the Gemara on page number two, which is the Gemara in Erevin, which I feel compelled. We must bring it here, even though we're not going to really treat it until next week. Rabbi Abba, Amar Shmuel. Down where the line is. Rabbi Abba said the name of Shmuel. Shalosh Shanim. For 3 years. 3 years going on this machlokas. Nechleku Beishamai Ubeis Hillel. For 3 years, these two groups, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, argued. Halal Omrim, these said, Halacha Kamo Seinu, the Halacha follows us. Vahalal Omrim, Halacha Kamo Seinu, and these ones said, the Halacha follows us. Yatza Abasko V'amra, Eilu V'eilu, Divrei Elokim Chayim Hein, Vahalacha Kabeis Hillel. These and these are the words of the living God. P.S. The halachas like Beis Hillel. So I want to talk about this next week, because this is one of the fascinating observations that Chazal make about Torah and Torah's Chaim. But the idea that this challenge of machlokes became something that people had to deal with, you see, is very apparent in this Gemara. Because on the one hand, you could say Divrei Elokim Chaim. On the other hand, you have to say, what are we supposed to do? So we need to figure out how to understand, how to look at Machlokas. So where does Machlokas start? That's really the first question. What's the origin of Machlokas? Did Moshe Rabbeinu come down from Sinai? Did he have a Machlokas with anyone? Do we have origins of Machlokas? So the Gemara says, on page number 3, and you have a couple of Gemaras that relate to the same point with slight variations, you'll see. The Gemara says, Mitchila, where the bracket is on page 3, this is Sanhedrin, Peches Amid Beis. Mitchila tells you a story. Lo hayumar b'machlokes b'Yisrael. They did not have a lot of disputes. Why? Ela beisin shel shivim ve'echad. There was a Sanhedrin, we call the Sanhedrin, the rabbinic court of 71 members, the chief court, supreme court, Yoshvin Belishkas Hagazis. They sat in the Lishkas Hagazis, that was the office in the Beis HaMikdash, where they held court. Ushnei Bati Dinim Shal Esim Vishlosha, and there were two additional courts that were comprised of 23 members each. This is the story of Jewish jurisprudence. This is it, right here. So if you had a question, the Gemara is going to describe what would happen. First, in the most, I guess the most senior court is the Supreme Court that's got 71. Then they had a 23, and then they had another 23. And then the Gemara says, well, they also had local, I guess we would call them district courts in today's legal parlance. The Gemara says, more than that, Ushar Bati Dinim Shalasim Vishloja Yosh Mechol Ayaris Yisrael. And there were courts that were comprised of 23 members in all the cities of Israel. So what happened? Hutzra Chadavar Lishol. Let's say somebody had a question. Sho'alin mi beis din shebi Iran. They would ask their local beis din. Im shamanu, if they heard what the rule is in that case. So they tell them. Omulem, they told them. Ve'im lav. Then they would boin lezeh shesamuch li'Iran. They would come to a nearby court. So let's say if you had a county court and a city court. So you would go to your local court and they said, I don't know. So they're great. Let's kick it back to the next level. To the circuit court or whatever. So they would come to the nearby one. If they didn't hear, Boin Lezesha al Pesach Harabayas. They would come up to Yerushalayim to the entrance of the Harabayas. And out there sat another level of the judiciary, this outside 23 member court. So they were obviously much more knowledgeable. They were more centralized and much more knowledgeable than the people out in the field. And they would take the case. If they didn't know, the Gemara says, Imlav, if they didn't know, Boin Lezesh al Pesach Azara, they would come to the entrance of the Azara inside the Beis HaMikdash, and they would say, Va'omer, Kach Darashti, V'kach Darshu Chaverai. This is what I thought, this is how I learned it, this is how I darshaned it, and this is what my colleagues said. Because remember, the Gemara in Chagiga said, when you approach an issue, you're going to find one perspective and another perspective. So they would present both sides to the court. Kach lamadati, this is how I learned. V'kach lamdu chaverai, this is how my friends learned. Im shamu, if they heard, amrulahem. V'im lav, if they didn't know how to resolve it, eilu ve'eilu bon lishkas hagazis. They would both go to the Supreme Court. What happened in the Supreme Court? Shesham Yoshvin, that's where they would sit. Mi Tamid Shal Shachar, from the first carbon in the morning. Ad Tamid Shal Bein Harabayim,
until the afternoon Karban. And on Shabbos and Yontif, they also were in session Yoshvim Bechel. And they would sit, the Chel was one of the areas around the Azara, more accessible to more people because the Azara was restricted. So the Gemara says, Nishala Shela Bifnehem. They asked the question was asked before them. Im Shamu, if they heard, the Amr Lahem, V'im Lav, Omdim Laminyan. What does Omdim Laminyan mean? Minyan? They counted it up. They had to count up, essentially, they would have to vote. They would have to take a vote. Umdu, stand up, Laminyan, for accounting. They had to vote. Because at the end of the day, the buck stops here, the Gemara says. They have to have a resolution. So they would Umdu Laminyan, they would have a decision based on their numbers, Umdu Laminyan. Rabu Hamatamin, if those who were of the opinion that it should be Tamei, then Timu. Then it would become Tamei. Period. No more discussion. Rabu Hamatarim, Tiharu. Then it would become Tar.
So no lower court would take a vote. It's because you said if he hadn't heard it, but they could obviously do it differently.
Great.
So
great. So that's a good question. I'm trying to remember where I saw a discussion about this. There is a discussion Rabbi Bleich has, I think, in one of his articles about a question of, let's say, a lower court does issue a ruling, but you want to appeal.
That was the other half of it.
Yes. So he has an article. It was published originally in Tradition. It slips my mind what the upshot of the article was. He has an article that's published in one of his contemporary halacha books on this question. I don't remember what he says, but he has a very lengthy article with like a trillion footnotes.
Otherwise, you would just simply bypass the lower courts all the time.
Yes. So he has a whole discussion about exactly this question. Glenn's asking about the appellate process. Rabbi Bleich has an article, but it's been a long time since I read it, so I don't remember it offhand. But now what happens? Because apparently, based on this system, there shouldn't be a lot of argument. Everybody should just get it resolved, either by your local court or by the Lishka Sagazis. But the Gemara says the following. Misharabu Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel, when they were increased, when they became many, the students of Shammai and Hillel, Shelo Shimshu Kol Tzarkam, that they didn't serve the full adequacy. We'll have to figure out what that means. Rabu Machlokes b'Yisrael. Now division increased in the Jewish people. V'nasis Torah k'shtei Toros. And the Torah became like two Torahs. And this is expanded on slightly in the Gemara on page 4. Go down to the bottom of page 4. One little line. In the end of the Gemara in Sota, the Gemara has an interesting phrase. The Gemara has Misharabu Zechuche Halev. I don't even know how to translate Zechuche Halev. So I look to Rashi, left-hand side where you see the arrow. She'in Matin Es Oznam, that they don't put their ear. Notice, by the way, that same expression. What do we say in the first Gemara in Chagiga you should do when you have machlokas? Put your ear. Listen carefully. Lishmoa Yafe Mipi Rabam. V'somchem al binasam. They rely on their own intuition, their own understanding. L'daktik shmuasam. What happens? Misha rabu zechuche alev. According to Rashi, that means people who are not listening carefully. Rabu machlokas b'Yisrael. Now the next Gemara. Misha rabu tamidi sham v'shamay shloshim. Who should call tzarkan? Rabu machlokas b'Yisrael. V'nasa Torah k'shtei Torahs. Now you have two Torahs. When is this happening? What is it referring to? So let's go through very briefly on one foot the history of Jewish learning. Moshe Rabbeinu was given the Torah at Har Sinai. That's in the year 2448. They get to Israel 40 years later. So Moshe Rabbeinu was Mekabalit. He gave it to Yehoshua. Yehoshua gave it to the Zakenim, so they had a group of elders. The elders gave it to the Nevi'im, they had Shoftim, they had a Sanhedrin, they established the Beis HaMikdash, they gave it to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, so now, you know, the Tekufa of Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, so that'll take you all the way into the, Bayis Sheni is about Churban Bayis Rishon is about 586, 586 BCE. So then, second Beis Hamikdash is coming back around about 70 years later. So, Shimon HaTzadik, Alexander of Macedon is about 330 BCE, something like that. By the time the second Beis HaMikdash is coming around, you're seeing a transition. You're moving from the prophets, which was the period of the first Beis HaMikdash, to the men of the Great Assembly. This is the beginning of Pirkei Avos. Anshei Knesset HaGdola, there were 120 members of this group of sages. So they transitioned the world of Jewish learning from the first Beis HaMikdash essentially to halfway through what we would call the second Beis HaMikdash, the second Commonwealth. And then the Mishnah picks up, Shimon HaTzadik was from the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and he passed it off to a group of people called the Zugos, the pairs. So you had a chief rabbi and then the assistant chief rabbi. And this is the first section of Pirkei Avos. It's, you know, Shmaya and Avtalio, and Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben, I forget his name. This, everybody comes in pairs in the beginning. So, according to what the Gemara is describing in Sanhedrin, from Moshe Rabbeinu, throughout, there was a central authority. It was initially with the Zakenim that worked with Yehoshua, and then that central authority somehow was passed along. It was established in the Beis HaMikdash, in the first Beis HaMikdash, reestablished in the second Beis HaMikdash. But we know that close to the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, things started to fall apart, you know, socially. We're about to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah, it's, you're talking about 167, 163, 161 BCE. This is the battles of the Maccabim with the Seleucid Greeks. So at this time, things are not so simple. Ultimately, the Sanhedrin has to disband before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. They have to leave Yerushalayim. They travel to the north 40 years before the Beis HaMikdash was even destroyed. And then they disband. They disappear into Jewish history. So imagine now, that's like the short version of Jewish history. Beis HaMikdash 1, Beis HaMikdash 2, the Churban, and now Golus. But on the learning side, you have a Sanhedrin in Beis HaMikdash, and then that Sanhedrin is led by a senior, let's say we'll call him the Av Beis Din, and then the Skand, the Nasi, and the Av Beis Din. So those two figures represent the Zugos. Those are the Zugos in the beginning of Pirkei Avos. So you have pairs. So these pairs are each teaching their students, and they're teaching their students, until you get to a very famous pair by the name of Hillel and Shammai. So Hillel and Shammai were students of the previous sages of Shmaya and Avtalion, but also there were, before Hillel became the man on campus, there was a group of sages called the B'nai B'Seira. So there were previous sages, Hillel and Shammai took over, and then they had students. These students were the base Hillel and the base Shammai. Okay, so until Shammai and Hillel came along, you didn't have a lot of machlokas. After Shammai and Hillel, you have a ton of machlokas. What happened exactly at that time? So there's the Yerushalmi that gives you a little bit more insight, that digs a little deeper on page 5. The Yerushalmi is in Chagiga. Says the Talmud Yerushalmi in Chagiga, Beis, here on the bottom where the arrow is. Barishona, in the beginning, again, the same description. Lo haisa machlokas b'Yisrael. There wasn't a machlokas in the Jewish people. Ella al hasmicha bilvad. There was only one machlokas. It's not that there were no machloksin. Now the Yerushalmi says there was one machlokas. What was the one issue that was subject to a machlokas? It was the question of smicha. What is that referring to? Usually, many karbonos that you offer in the Beis HaMikdash, you're required to perform smicha. Smicha means you have to take both hands, you have to lean it, it's called smicha b'chol kocho, you have to lean it on the animal. So right now, I'm leaning b'chol kocho. What's the measure of that? If you pulled the table away, I would fall down. That's the measure of whether it's called b'chol kocho or not. So the question is, are you allowed to do smicha b'chol kocho on an animal on Yantif? Well, usually we know there's an issa d'rabbanan to ride an animal on Yantif. Because that's a shavuos, the Gemara has a concern in Beis, so maybe you're going to, if you ride an animal, you might break off a branch. So the question is, you're also not, a similar kind of thing, you're also not allowed to sit on a tree on Shabbos or Yantif. You're not allowed to climb a tree because you might also break off a branch. There's a whole question about hammocks. How there's a way you can establish, you can put a hammock in a tree in a certain way that's not called mishtamish be'ilon. But the question is, when you do smicha on a behema, and I'm leaning on it like this,
is that the equivalent of riding on an animal? Does that supersede the restriction against riding an animal on Yantif or not? This is a debate. It's recorded in the Gemara Maseches Beitza. But the Gemara says this was the original machlokas. This was the only machlokas, according to the Yerushalmi. There was nothing else. This was the only argument, whether it's permitted or not, to do smicha on a behema on Yantif, on a karban. That's the question. That's the first machlokas. Then the Gemara says, well, after that, va'amdu Shammai ve'Hillel, and then Shammai and Hillel came along, and they did have a few machlokas in, the two of them. How many did they have? The Rishalmi says, va'asu osan arba. They only had four machlokas in. And here the Mefarshim, the Pnei Moshe, the Karban Nisanal, they discuss, what are the four? So we went from one machlokas to four machlokas in. Okay. Four machloksin, not bad. Still, and you can figure them out, which they are. Four machloksin, that's all. But, says the Yerushalmi, v'rabu, however, same line, mishirabu talmidei b'Shammai v'talmidei b'Hillel, v'lo shimshu es rabbeim kol tzarkin, they didn't serve adequately, v'rabu ha-machlokas b'Yisrael, and now, all of a sudden, there's tons of machloksin, v'nechleku l'shtei kitos, and they became two groups, Eilu metamin ve'eilu metarin. Vod eina asid alachzer mekom lemekoma ad sheyavo ben David. Until Mashiach comes, we're not going to fix this situation with the machlokas story.
That's,
we're not going to fix it right away. Rub some machlokas. What's that?
Yeah.
Great. Very good. So the Gemara says in Yevamos that they would marry each other. They were still very congenial. It's interesting, the Mefarshim discussed, it doesn't mean that they were mavater on their own personal shitas, because, you know, if the Gemara says in the beginning of Yevamos that they had very radically different views of who was allowed to do yibum to whom, and according to one group, this particular wedding would be absolutely prohibited. So they, according to many Mefarshim, they would indicate to the other one, let's say if you were from the Beis Hillel and I was from the Beis Shammai, so if you were looking to make a shidduch, I would tell you, look, this one, that's not for your chevra. You should find somebody else. This daughter, it's better for you. You know, they would be honest with each other. They were very congenial, but doesn't necessarily mean they said, oh, our opinion, we're not going to stay to our opinion. No, they were very, very strong about their opinion. And we could also have a whole discussion, which is not for now, is how the Psak developed that it should be like Beis Hillel. Maybe that'll be for a couple weeks from now. Yeah, how did it become like Beis Hillel? The fact that a Baskol came out in the Gemara in Erevin and said, Halach is like Beis Hillel. Well, usually when a Baskol comes out, the Talmud says, don't listen. So we're going to have to figure out. The Gemara has a lot of discussion to be shown in Bali Atosis how we pass like Beis Hillel. Let's hold that for a second. But now what we're saying is, there is this major machlokas, because Shaloshim Shu called Sarkam. So what is the source of it? What does that mean, Shaloshim Shu called Sarkam? So I'm encouraging you to try to open your mind for a second and appreciate page 6. Because immediately what you're going to think is, why did he put that there? I can't read a single thing. Right? But just feel the greatness of this page, even if you can't read it. This is a 400-year-old, this is a 400-year-old printing. This is the original printing in Kushta, in Shin Chav Beis. We're right now in Tuf Shin Ayin Ches. This is in Shin Chav Beis, so it's 456 years old. I got this on Hebrew Books. You can get other copies of the Emunas Videos, but why would you get another one if you can get this one? Think about this. You're looking at a page from almost 500 years ago. This is what it looked like. This was their old copy of the Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon. The Rav Sadia Gaon, he lived in the 9th century, 10th century. I don't want to say he's the most famous Gaon, because that would be insulting to the other Gaonim, but it's not a popularity contest. He's the most well-known of the Gaonim. The Gaonim is this major influential period of great rabbis who are living in Babylonia. They had two major yeshivas that were situated in Babylonia, and if you're going to go from after the Talmud, there was a short period called the Savoraim, not well-known scholars. The Savoraim were pretty quiet in terms of what they wrote and what they contributed. They're pretty quiet. After the Savoraim, so if you're talking, let's say, from the 7th century through the 11th century, this is the period known as the Gaonim. They were called Gaonim because the yeshiva that they led was called Gaon Yaakov. So if you were the head of the yeshiva, you were called a Gaon. Today, the word Gaon means
genius.
Genius, right.
So it could be that you may have been a goan. If you weren't a genius, it could be you were a good fundraiser, so you were a goan.
For sure.
That's also, that's also takes guidance.
Sure.
So if you were...
The enabler.
Right, so if you were a goan, it meant you were the head of the yeshiva of Gaon Yaakov, and people came from all over the world by mail to the Gaonim to ask them questions. And they had very important formative opinions that shaped the world that we have today. So probably the most prominent of the Gaonim, there were many important Gaonim, Rav Hai Gaon and Rav Natronoi Gaon and many Gaonim, but Rav Sadia Gaon is very, very important. Rav Sadia Gaon wrote a book about Jewish faith called Emunos Videos, Faiths and Thoughts. And in here... And you're looking at the first printed edition of the Emunos Videos. Remember, this was written much before. This is written over 1,000 years ago. But originally, of course, they didn't have printing presses. So when they had the first printing press, this is the first printed edition of the Emunos Videos. And here Rav Sadia Gaon opens the door for us to start understanding. We'll start with Rav Sadia Gaon, and then we're going to really dig in with the Rambam. Va'amru, and they said, Chachmi Yisrael... I put the little arrow there. I'm going to read it out. If you can't read it, don't feel bad. Just love the fact that it's really old. A person who did not finish out the issues of wisdom. They didn't serve adequately. Then Rabu Machlokos Vilamadnu Mizeh. We learn from this. Ki ha-talmidim k'shehim mashlimim ha-limud lo ha'isa b'neha machlokes v'lo irbuv. When they were really full with each other, the students, when they really were complete, there was no argument. V'lo irbuv, there was no mixture. Originally, he says, there was greater clarity. And then there was no machlokes. What does he mean, there was greater clarity and there was no machlokas? What changed? So the Rambam, if you look on the next page, on page 7, the Rambam develops this in great detail. This Rambam, many of us saw earlier this year, this was the Rambam who enumerated for us, this is the Rambam in the beginning of the Pirush HaMishnayos, the 5 sections of Torah Shebaal Peh. Pirushim HaMekubalim, accepted traditions. What is an esrog? Halacha l'moshe misinai, how big is your mikvah? Then we said the last two were gzeros v'takanos, enactments and fences, enactments. And then the middle section were the yud gimel midos, or the many, many midos, the ways of interpreting the Torah. Remember, those are the different comparisons and the hermeneutical principles, you could call them, if you like to use fancy words. That middle section, says the Rambam, is the only place where there was argument. The Rambam's opinion is, there was never a debate of what is an esrog. No one ever thought an esrog was a persimmon. Even though it says priyetz hadar, it does not say an esrog. And the Rambam's opinion is actually that there is no machlokas about halacha l'moshe misinai. That's a little bit of a question, because there seem to be sometimes machlokas about halacha l'moshe misinai. The Rambam will say, well, that's not a halacha l'moshe misinai. Or, there might be a machlokas, what is a halacha l'moshe misinai? But if you can brand it as a veritable halacha l'moshe misinai, the Rambam says there's no machlokas about that. So where is the machlokas? Where did it all come from? It came in the third category. The questions of comparisons. What about learning something from in between the lines of the text? Right? Kal v'chomer. Inferences. That's where the machlokas came about. So the Rambam now is going to disabuse you of one way of looking at this whole story. Because until now we're saying, well, there was no machlokas, everybody viewed it the same. Then all of a sudden, there was rabu machlokas because Talmidei Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. So the Rambam says, don't think one thing, I'll tell you it's something else. Here's what do not think. Look on column B, on the left side. He says, no. Avol svaras, if somebody thinks, bottom column, in bottom paragraph in column B, page 7. Avosvaras Misha Khoshav Shigama Dinim Shishbe Machlokis Kabbalah Mimoshe, Vinaflabam Machlokis Machmas Tos Bekabal O Shikha. The Shah Echad Sodik Bekabalos Vasheni To, Bekabalos O Shishachach, O Shaloshama Mirabu Komashitzarch Lishmoa. The Rambam says, but somebody who thinks that also those rules that have a machlokis they received from Moshe, and a machlokis fell machmas tos bekabola because they made a mistake in how they learned it, or forgetfulness, and one is correct and one is not. Or he didn't hear it correctly, and he brings proof from this. That we keep quoting. Go to column A at the top. V'nasis Torah k'shtei toros. Hine ze chai Hashem dover meguna umuzar ma'od. The Rambam says that is, it's gross. It's maguna. It's unbefitting you. You're smarter than that. You're brighter than that. That's unbefitting by the name of God. Umuzar ma'od. It's very odd. That's not what the Gemara says. That's not what it says. Don't think that what it means is because they lo shimshu kol tzarkam, they didn't adequately serve their teachers, it means they forgot the core traditions that they had. That's not what it means, the Rambam says. Nobody had an argument about what an esrog is, and even though the students of Shammai and Hillel had differences of opinion, they never argue about what an esrog is. That's not the issue. That's the Rambam's opinion. As you see, he's very strong about it. He goes on. V'hu davar bilti nachon. It is absolutely untrue. V'lo matim laklalim v'chushi bo'anashim shemehem kibalim es haTorah. If you think that the sages have machloksim because they forgot stuff, he says you're casting aspersions on the sages that we receive our whole Torah from. All of Yiddishkeit will forget, will fall apart according to this Rambam. That's not the pshat in the Gemara that we're learning. The Cholze Botel. And he says, the Ram goes on, and he says, that's going to cause huge problems in Hashkafa. People are going to, it's all going to be falling apart. He says, that's not the Pshat. What is the Pshat? Go to the, skip the next paragraph. Aval Amram, this is what they said. Misherabu Talmidei Shammai Vehilo Shloshim Shu Kol Tzarkan. Rab Samach Lokas Yisrael. Inyan Ze Barur Ma'od. I'm on the third paragraph in column A, third line down. Barur ma'od. And this is very interesting. Kishnei anashim, two men, shehem shavin bahavana, that they are equal in their understanding, ubi'iyun, and their analysis, ubi'idiyas haklalim, and in the rules, in the knowledge of the rules, shalameidim mehem, lo tie b'neam machlokas, they will not have any argument b'mashalomdim, what they learned ba'achas hamidos b'shum panim. He says there's never going to be an argument. If two people have the same knowledge base and they have the same set of tools by which they analyze, there's not going to be any room for error because they look at it in the same way. And he says, and let's say there is a machlokes imtie tie muetes. He says, if there is a machlokes, it's only going to be very little. Just like Kamosha Lomat Sanu machlokes ben Shama v'Hilo al b'halachas achoros. How many machlokes did the Yerushalmi say there were between Shama and Hilo?
Four.
That's it. Just four. So what's the what happened? The Rambam says, v'kasher nismait limud talmidehem. When the students' limud, their learning, diminished. V'nechlechshu etzlam, and it became weak with them. Darkei hadin behashva'a, the manner of comparing, the manner of analysis, the methodology by which you analyze an issue. Darkei hashva'a, compared to Shammai v'Hillel Rabboseihem, then nafla machlokas beinem b'shas masa umatan b'har b'inyanam. Now they have a huge series of debates. There are tons of debates. Why? The debates, the Rambam says, don't, they are not emanating from the issues. What are they emanating from? The methodology. Now, if you look at the same issue from two different vantage points, of course you're going to have lots of machlokas in, because they're not using the same methodology of analysis. The Rambam goes on. Lefi shekol echad mehem don lefi koach sichlo. Each one of them looks at it based on the strength of their knowledge. Ulefi klolim hayidu imlo. Ve'ein, turn to the next page. Ve'ein la'ashimam bekach. And the Rambam says, you can't fault people for that. There's nothing wrong with that. People view it in different ways. This happens all the time. Have you been to a Shabbos table where two people are talking about the same issue? They have the same facts, But their assumptions are different, and their ways of looking at it are different, and the calibration of values is different. So the Rambam says, you can't blame them. Ki lo nuchal anachnu lahachriach shnei b'nei adam ha-misvachim shi-isvach lefi sichlam shol Yehoshua Pinchas. You can't force two people to look at it the same way of other people. L'maisa, you're going to look at an issue based on the way that you were trained. Years ago, we had the privilege of having Rabbi Dr. Schneer Lyman here in Skokie for a Shabbos. And we had a treat, Nechama and I, because we are related to him. So cousin Schneer came to us for Shabbos lunch. And he said something at the lunch table, at our Shabbos table, which struck me as astonishing. He said, in his inimitable style, he said, today we need graduate schools more than ever before. Today we need graduate schools more than ever before. So I asked him, what did he mean by that? He said, because today, there's so much information out there in the world, but what's lacking? The methodology of analysis. Why do you go to graduate school? You don't go to graduate school to learn, you know, more information, to read more books. You go to graduate school to understand a method of analysis, of how to take apart a problem, how to put it back together, and how to think about things. You learn about how to think. You don't learn about how much stuff. You don't learn stuff. You learn how to learn the stuff. So he said, in today's day and age, with such an overabundance of information, we need more focus on how to learn, not just to learn. And that's true in the world of yeshivas, of course, as well. Because today, every Tom, Dick, and Harry can put a shaila into Google and come up with some psak based on a, you know, a computer algorithm, I guess. I don't know how Google paskin shilas. I don't know where he got smicha from, but the point is that there's a ton of information. The Rambam's saying the issue of the creation of machlokas was not about a lack of information. They all knew the information. It's that because they didn't, shaloshim shukol tzarkam, they didn't listen carefully to how Shammai and Hillel analyzed the problems in the same way, well, their students began to analyze the same problems in different ways, with different frames. Yeah.
So it seems like maybe it goes a little meta beyond that, because it's almost like this is inevitable with the increasing body of knowledge that comes before. So if you had like the same body of knowledge and the same methodology, but you have one Borg absorbing it this way and the other Borg absorbing it this way, if you ask them at this point in time, they'll still disagree, even with the same methodology. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you just—it's almost like just saying this is inevitable with the spread of Judaism, and that because there's more opinions out there.
I think he's saying differently. I think he's saying it really wasn't inevitable, because if the students had really attuned themselves to the methodology of Shammai and Hillel that was very closely aligned, and this is what we're going to develop more next week. We already alluded to it at the beginning, that first Gemara and Chagiga, all issues have multiple perspectives. Mm-hmm. Right?
It seems more critical than that, though.
Meaning,
you know, at the bottom of the first page, it's talking about how, you know, they don't have the full knowledge base or rule sets that they need in order to analyze it properly, so they're each analyzing it with the subset of the rules that they know, right? That's just in, you know, what they know, and they don't know enough to analyze it the right way. So they're each analyzing it based on the whichever rules they know, and not based on all the rules, which is what it was previously. Because if it's just the proliferation of information,
right,
you would
exactly
expect it to be more gradual.
Exactly. So that's what I was going to say. I think it's different than what Glenn is saying. I think what David is saying is that it's that because they didn't have that attunedness, I don't know if that's an English word, if they would have paid closer attention, then they would have had all the same rules, and I don't mean rules as in rules, I mean methods of analysis, of points of comparison. You know, if they would have had the same assumptions about how to look at a problem, you can have a ton more information, a ton new questions come up, but if everybody's looking at it with the same assumptions and the same methodology, the Rambam says they would have come up, and we would continue to come up with the same results. What do we see today? We can have two different poskim handle the same question and come up with completely different answers. Why? Because their method of analysis is radically different.
So I'll try one more time.
Yeah. Ask again. No, it's okay. Then I'll get
both
the Karen and
the same framework.
Yes. Same framework.
So I'm saying yes to everything you're saying, but also, suppose you're a home inspector, and you're certified. Two home inspectors are trained the same way. They analyze a house the same way. One walks in the front door, one walks in the back door. The one in the back door looks at it and says, okay, I'm looking at the bones and the walls. And the other one comes in through the front door. They could form a different opinion, even with the same analysis, as they digest this large amount of information starting at different points.
So I'll tell you why I would think they would not. Because at the end of the day, take the home inspection analysis for a second. At the end of the day, because they're going to end up filling out the same form, right? They're both going to end up saying, this is what the roof looks like, because these are the things we look for in the roof. This is what the attic looks like. This is what the basement looks like. This is where they flooded the last time. So even if they're going to come in the front door and the back door, but they're going to come back to the same principles of analysis, the same criteria, and there's not going to be a machlokas. Yeah, Karen, what were you
going to say? That it's how Rambam talks about prophecy, and that you have to, it has to be, the knowledge has to be there. The knowledge has to be there before what comes out is unerring and consistent.
Okay, I guess it's similar in a sense, but it's different in a sense that, yes, it's similar in that it all depends on the person refining themselves.
Right.
But it's different in that here we're not talking about prophecy, which is going to come from Hashem to you, and it's not, obviously it's filtered through the person, mm-hmm. but it's not really, you're not really using your personal intuition and your cognition and your intellect to shape
the
your opinion.
Truth.
That's what we're going to talk about next week. We're going to talk about, we're not going to, we don't really, this week, we're really not interested in truth.
Okay,
we're going to, truth is going to be important next week. Right now, we'd actually rather argue about everything. This week is my focus, yeah.
But also this idea that the further we have come from Har Sinai, we have less of God.
So what Paul is saying is interesting, because you might have said what Paul said, which is, you read us Hadoros, as you get further from Sinai, we are, in a certain sense, spiritually weaker. So by definition, of course, there's going to be machlokas. And I wonder if the Rambam is kind of, he doesn't mention it in his first critique, but I wonder if he's taking aim at that, because he's saying, don't think that this idea of machlokas is a function of Yeridas Hadoros per se. Because then you could say, well, it's going to get more diluted over time. The Rambam says you can't say that. It's not because the tradition gets diluted over time. Because then we would say, well, this is just one. So the authority may, but that shouldn't explain why there's machlokas. Right?
Because it's partly in the eye of the beholder, or the beholders, right? So if Moshe paskens something, nobody's going to question that.
Okay.
He had undoubted authority. But today, I don't know if we have any.
That's definitely true.
Right? So there's machlokas.
Right, but here's. But the question should still be, within every generation, there should still be the, you know, if beforehand the Sanhedrin paskened A, and then all of a sudden they can't agree on anything, why are they looking at it so differently? That's the question that we're trying to figure out. They looked at it in a similar way. The issue of authority is going to be another factor in the proliferation of multiple practices. But we want to know before the practice question, because that's what we're going to talk about next week, Elu ve'elu. How do you have multiple people doing multiple different things? We're just asking, how did the machlokas get started in the first place? That's what the Rambam is addressing. Right? And that's before the question of authority. Because the question of authority comes to, okay, how are we going to decide? And that's something that we're not used to, because we're used to, in general, having a Shulchan Aruch, having one unified practice, but that oscillates over the course of history. Sometimes there was much more diversity. I don't know, if you were living in Rabbi Yossi, in some of these areas in Bavel, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, you might have been eating chicken with milk, and then you're in somebody else's town, you weren't. And Rabbi Lezer, there's a lot. We'll have to talk about that more as we go along. So this Rambam now is telling us a clue about how to look at machlokas. If this is how we look at machlokas, we can now take certain things off the table and say there's not going to be any machlokas about them at all, ever. Certain things are not subject to machlokas. What was the Rambam saying to us is not subject to machlokas? Things that are purely tradition. Well, if that's true, that actually fits with the Rashi on the next page, on page 9. So Rashi Ksubas Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis, where Rashi has an important observation. Sometimes you're going to find a machlokas in the Gemara, in a certain sense, it's agreeing with the Rambam. In a certain sense, it's not agreeing with the Rambam. Sometimes, Rashi says, you will find a machlokas in the Gemara, what we call tre amoroi aliba de, two sages of the Talmud according to one sage. So Rashi says, look where the bracket is here in Ksubas. Dechi pligi tre, when two people argue, aliba dechad, according to one. What does that mean? Mar amar, Mr. says, hachi amar ploni, so said such and such. Umar Amar, and the other one says, Hachi Amar Ploni, so said such and such. Rashi's last words of the line, Chad Minayu, one of them, where the arrow is at the bottom, Chad Minayu, what's the next word?
Mishaker.
One of them is lying. That's a very, very bold statement.
Yeah.
Chad Minayu Mishaker, Rashi says. So on the one hand, he's arguing on the Rambam, because he's saying, now, it could be the Rambam's not arguing in this, because this is in the Gemara, the Rambam was talking about earlier, but Rashi is saying, there are times where you'll find Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was from the first generation of the Amoraim, so he's living in the 3rd century in Eretz Yisrael, very important, one of the most important of the sages of the Talmud. Rabbi Yochanan lived in Eretz Yisrael. Where was the predominant life of the Talmud happening? At this point already, not in Eretz Yisrael, where is it?
In
Bavel. So there were a lot of students of Rabbi Yochanan, like Ravin, used to come. And the Gemara says, oh, ki asa Ravin, when Ravin came, he said, this is what I heard from Rabbi Yochanan. But then somebody else would come and say, oh, I heard from Rabbi Yochanan something else. So Rashi says, that kind of machlokas, that's not a real machlokas. That's not a real machlokas. And you don't say, which is what we're going to talk about next week, elu ve'elu. You can't say, oh, this is right and this is right. Rashi says, in that machlokas, if it's one's a factual machlokas, one is right.
A liar.
And one is wrong. One is lying, Rashi says. Because it can't be that Rabbi Yochanan said both.
Is that an intentional lie or just a misinterpretation?
So, assumably, it's just a mistake. I assume he's not trying to misrepresent what Rabbi Yochanan said, but he must have made a mistake. Right? Isn't that very sharp? Very sharp.
Yeah, but that language means that he's actually trying to convey something as a lie.
It doesn't mean that he's deliberate.
You would say, what? Let him say Toer.
Why does Rashi choose such sharp language? Because he's trying to contrast this with what we're going to talk about next week about Elu ve'Elu, about multiple perspectives. We started this whole discussion with how, you know, there's Memtes looking this way, the whole Gemara Chagiga about the guy scratching his head saying, I can't learn, everybody, this one says this, one said that, because there are multiple perspectives. Rashi's saying, in contrast to multiple valid perspectives, where one Amor will say it's kosher, and one will say that it's pasul, well, there you have multiple perspectives, but not this. And here's another one, which is very interesting, page 10. This is a very important sefer called the Stechemed. Stechemed was authored by Rav Chaim Chizkiyahu Medini. He authored this multi-volume encyclopedia of halacha, which runs by the alphabet. So this, everything has a klal. There's Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. This is in Klal Mem. In Klal Mem, he has Klal, in Mareches Mem, Klal Kuf Samach Dalet, Machlokes B'metzias. An argument about metzias. What's metzias?
Reality.
Reality. So he quotes a slew. I only gave you the first page. It's really interesting. This becomes, in the yeshiva world, this is a hot topic. Can you have a machlokas in metzias? In fact, can you have a machlokas in metzias? Well, based on what the Rambam is telling us and what Rashi is telling us, can you have a machlokas in metzias? No. You can't have a machlokas in metzias about a fact. The Rambam says you can only have machlokas in analysis because you look at the facts and you interpret them in a certain way. But you can't have a machlokas about whether something is or it isn't. So he quotes a Tosus Yontif and Perek HaBon and a bunch of other things, a whole fascinating discussion in the Achronim, how to deal with a machlokas in Metzias. So I'll give you an example. The Gemara has a machlokas, two Tanaim. Can you be Yotzei? It fits both directions. Can you be yotzei your chiyav of matzah on the night of Pesach with rice? Rice matzah. which, by the way, would be convenient for some people because it doesn't have allergens, like people are gluten-free. Oris v'dochan, the Gemara wants to know. The Gemara asks about a different context, but it would be apt in this context as well. The Gemara discussed in the context of, if you make rice pudding on Pesach, do you have to worry about chametz? So it presents two opinions in the Tanaim. One says that it's chametz, and the other one says that it's not chametz. So wait a second. How can you have machlokas, whether it's chametz or it's not chametz? Either it is or it isn't. So Rav Shechter Shalita likes to quote this machlokas, and he says, look in the Yerushalmi. You know what the Yerushalmi says? The Yerushalmi says they did an experiment. Or as they say in Chicago, experiment. They did an experiment, and they took rice, orez, and dochan, and they put it in a pot, and they put water in there, and they let it sit for an hour. And there was some kind of process. You know, in science lab, they tell you there's something called aerobic respiration and anaerobic respiration, fermentation. That's the process that we call chimutz. It lets off little bubbles, the carbon dioxide, I think, the bubbles that come out of the fermentation. So the Yerushalmi says, they did an experiment. And what was the machlokas? The machlokas was not what they saw. The machlokas was how to interpret the results. Is what you're seeing, those little bubbles with the rice and the water, is that called chimutz? Or is that called sirchon? There's something is happening there. There's some kind of probably anaerobic respiration that the molecules and the organism, the whole thing is doing. The question is, how do you interpret it? So sometimes I said, yeah, that's also that process of development. That's also called chametz. And the chachamim we passed, and that's not chametz. That's sirchon. That's like rotting. Yes, it is undergoing a change. If you put rice in a pot for an hour, or dochan, I don't know exactly what dochan is, some other kind of quats, not really a grain. Well, therefore, those things are not really grain. They're not boli de chimutz, and they're also not going to be kosher for bread. Only thing that's going to be kosher for matzah and for challah are the chameshes minei dagan. But one of the conditions of matzah is that it has to be potentially boli de chimutz. Well, those things are not boli de chimutz. So this is what, when you go through the world of learning and you see, oh, it's machlokas and metzias, a lot of times, it's not a question about, is it a machlokas and metzias? It's a machlokas on perspective. Does this meet the adequate threshold for the issue that you're talking about? You know, you could even say, I'm going to look at the same color. I'm going to look at the same color. Some, you know, one mandamer says that color is black, the other mandamer says that color is blue. So what am I looking at? I'm looking at navy. So some people say, yeah, navy, it's black. Others say navy, it's blue. Are they arguing in metzias? They're not arguing in metzias. They're arguing on your perspective. Because every shade, at some point, if you get really, really dark, you're going to hit the threshold of black. The question is, well, how close to black is it? You know, a lot of times in halacha, there are questions that, and this is what the Steichemet is getting at. It looks on the surface like a machlokas and metzias, but it's not. It's a machlokas in analysis. It's in how do you measure it? How do you compare it? And it fits with the Rambam's initial interpretation of what is subject to machlokas and what's not. Like Rashi said, facts are not subject to machlokas, but interpretation is. Yeah, George.
Is that why we have the problem with kitniyot, Ashkenazim hold one way, Sephardim hold another way?
So it happens to be that kitniyot is a different story. The origin of kitniyot is that it's a minhag. So in Ashkenazi communities, they took on this minhag and it became very strong. In Sephardic communities, they did not take on kitniyot, so it never picked up there. The reason for kitniyot is probably twofold. One is that you have, in the old days, you had, let's say, sacks of grain. So if you use the same bags for carrying rice that you use for carrying chametz, so maybe you'll get some mixed in. And then another reason for kitniyot might be that the flour that you make out of rice or soy may be easily confused with the flour that you're making out of, you know, the standard grains. And by the way, the nafka mina of this question came up about the story regarding quinoa. Is quinoa subject to the chumrah, Ashkenazi chumrah, the minhag of kitniyot, or not? So this became a big question in recent years. What's the reason for kitniyot? And then to what is, you know, to what we apply that principle. But that's more a question of, it's only a minute. We're asking, where does the din come from? So I want to conclude with one fascinating, awesome insight that's going to start to shift things. Because until this point, machlokes, I don't want to say it's a dirty word, but it's not the best thing in the world. Machlokes came about because there was a decrease in our attentiveness to methodology. So now everybody looks at it in different ways. You know, you find the same thing today. You can have the same halachic question posed to two different poskim, and because they calibrate different factors differently. A great example of this, I had a discussion once with Rav Schechter about this question, was a tshuva that I once saw when the Kola was learning Hilchos Nida and Hilchos Evan Ezra, were learning issues of infertility, was the question about contraception. So the factors, the various factors that go into a posik's decision about the permissibility of contraception can be very varied. You can have the same question posed to two different poskim, and if one posik is putting a greater emphasis on certain factors, let's say pru ravu or sheves or other factors like that, that may result in a different psak than somebody who has the same shaila, but their method of analysis places greater weight on other factors, shalom bayis, mental health. There's a lot of things that go into these kind of questions. So you can have the same question with very different answers, with very huge nafkaminas. So it sounds, at this point, it sounds like machlokas kind of developed. It's not necessarily such a great thing. But the truth is, and as we will develop more next week, there actually is not just something that is, you know, destructive about machlokas. There is something important about machlokas. And we could start to kind of think about that in light of this fascinating... Yeah, Ira, what were we going to say?
I was just going to ask, isn't that the same thing when learning Yisr Baheter? The same context. You're learning, you know, one is usser and the other one is mutter. In the same respect to that.
What do you mean by that?
What I'm saying is, if you say something is usser, you know, initially, and if you look into it, maybe there's a way to make whatever it is, to make it mutter.
Right, so that may be the change in your own mind from Isser v'Heter may not be a difference of analysis. It may be just a further, you know, an opportunity to further analyze it, but it's within your own framework.
Right.
Right? Here we're saying different rabbis, and all the way back to the students of Beis Hamikdash, they had different frameworks. So you may come to different conclusions as you become more familiar with the facts or as you recalibrate it in your own mind, which is an example of that. Yes. But what we're seeing is that there are just different sets of calibration.
I see.
That's what's going to lead to, yeah, you know, various machloksim. You know, whether we should encourage the young men of our community to serve in the Israeli army. That's a halachic question, which has eminent poskim who take diametrically opposed views to that question. It's an unquestionably halachic issue, and there are, as we well know, diametrically opposed views on that point, both of which are valuable. But that's an example of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, because they're looking at it with different sets of assumptions, with different foci. So we're going to have to figure that out a little more next week. But this line of Reb Tzadok is really fascinating, because it starts to shift the corner, to turn the corner, to shift our perspective. Reb Tzadok HaKoin of Lublin, Reb Tzadok was one of the giants of the world of Hasidus, it's the early end of the 19th century, early 20th century. He says something very interesting, that when I described this to Rabbi Engel, I told him, I really have no idea what he's saying. He said, so you're not going to say it? I said, no, I'm going to say it anyway. But I'll tell you, I don't know what he's saying. He's saying something deeply Kabbalistic, which is why I don't know what he's saying. But it's good to put it out there anyway. He says, look at this. He says, a Torah Shebal Peh, the oral tradition, underlined the bottom right column, Yeshba Misitra De'etz Hadas Tovara. It has from the side of the Eitz Hadas Tovara, De'ihu Isser Veheter. And he quotes a Zohar. V'yesh b'hem mem tesponim tahar u'mem tesponim tamei. It has 49 ways of looking at something that's tahar and 49 ways of something that's tamei. And this v'zeu ha-machlokes aval hu l'tikuno shel olam. Originally, the Gemara says in Nedarim, had the Jewish people, had we not made the error of the Chet HaEgel, we would have only gotten 5 books of the Torah. That's it. We wouldn't have gotten Torah Sheval Peh. And says Reb Tzaddok, the 5 books, the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, that comes from the tree in Gan Eden called the Eitz HaChayim. Ein v'zeh machlokas. What happened? Unfortunately, we slipped up at the chait of the Eigel, and somehow there's some brokenness, some fracture crept into the world. So what were we given as a gift? We were given Torah Shebaal Peh. That Torah Shebaal Peh, it's complicated. Because now life is complicated. But you know what happens in a complicated life? You have different perspectives, as we all know. It's not black and white anymore. Now it's very complex. It's not simple. That, he says, that's the Eitz Hadas Tovara. Life just got complicated. Now, I don't know what this means on a deep level, al pi derech hasod, but look at Adam Rishon. His life was very black and white. It was just MS, like the Rambam says, MS and Sheker. It was just truth and not truth. And then he ate from the Eitz Hadas Tovara. The Eitz Hadas Tovara, there's a mixture. There are aspects that are Tov, but there are aspects that are Ra. There are aspects that are Tomei and Tor, Osir and Mutter. So says Reb Tzaddok, Machlokas is given to us to delve into it and to mend the world. Opportunity is the way you should look at Machlokas. Not as travesty, but now living in this post-fractured world, apparently, according to Reb Tzaddok, by learning through Machlokas, you're actually mending. It's actually a tool for us to reach the deeper truths and to kind of tease out the Tov from the Ra, which is mixed together in the Eitz Hadas Tov Ra. So this is what we're going to talk about in Mirtz Hashem as we follow up next week. The Eilu Ve'Eilu, that this process of Machlokas is actually something that is contributing to us as B'nai Torah, as people who are learning, and also as spiritual people. Because it's not just saying, well, you know, nobody knew what to do, so now they started arguing. It's because this is now a way that we can get a deeper understanding of what is Torah Shebaal Peh, what is the Ribbono Shel Olam's Ratzon for us, and it can actually help us grow. Have a great week.